So now here's the attendance sheet. Please mark yourselves present. Pass it on. So tonight we are going to discuss a bit about text 58, which is the shortest of all the verses here by Srila Jiva Goswami. There's no point one or two, it's just all there on page 79. So yesterday then, in text 57, Jiva Goswami was discussing Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 10, verses 3, 4, 5, and 6. Four verses which were elaborating on, describing the first nine topics from Sarga to Mukti. So now, in text 58, he's going to begin the discussion about Ashraya, the tenth topic. And seeing Ashraya, of course, is the main thing that everything is really focusing on, even the other nine topics. So there is more discussion about the Ashraya. In this particular verse, in this text, 58, Jiva Goswami quotes verse 7 from the 10th chapter of the second canto of the Bhagavatam. Then in 59, he discusses verses 8 and 9, but actually it's mainly, he quotes both 8 and 9, but the discussion is about 8. And then in 60, he discusses verse 9 at some length. So, in other words, this 10th topic really gets a lot more analysis and evaluation from Jiva Goswami. So, this, though, text 58, is more like introductory, you could say, quoting Canto 2, Chapter 10, verse 7, the first of these three verses, which is focusing on and describing the Ashraya. So that is here. Let's read through text 58. First he quotes this verse from the Bhagavatam. Abhasas cha nirodhas cha yatoschadya vasiyate sa ashraya param brahma paramat meti shabjate. And then there's some Sanskrit prose. So the verse translates, the Supreme One, who is celebrated as the Supreme Being or the Supreme Soul, is the supreme source of the cosmic manifestation, as well as its reservoir and winding up. Thus, he is the supreme fountainhead, the absolute truth. Or as the Sanskrit says, sa ashraya. He is the ashraya. And he is param brahma and paramatma. So then let's read the analysis given by Jiva Goswami. In this verse, the abhas, appearance, is material creation, and the nirodha, cessation, is its dissolution. The word yata refers to one from whom the creation emanates, by whom it is made perceivable to the jiva's senses, adya vasiyate, and in whom it is dissolved. That renowned fountainhead of existence, the Ashraya, is known as Brahman, the Supreme Truth, and Paramatma, the Supersoul. Here, the word iti expresses the idea of a complete category, thus implying that Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is included as well. Later, we shall explain the Ashraya in detail. So that's verse 58, text 58, pretty short. But it is important, even though it's pretty brief, it's introducing the Ashraya, Sa Ashraya. This is the Ashraya. This is the shelter, or described here as the Supreme Being, the Supreme Soul, the Supreme Source of the cosmic manifestation, as well as its reservoir and winding up. And therefore he is the supreme fountainhead, the absolute truth. So these are different ways of understanding what the term Ashraya means, what the implication is. Shelter, but in what respects? How is that sheltering going on? In that he is the source. He is the reservoir. He is that entity into who it goes back when there's the devastation. He is the supreme fountainhead. And ultimately, he's the absolute truth. So these are different perspectives, you could say, on Ashraya, the shelter, the supreme shelter. Fountainhead means that from which everything's coming. Fountainhead. Fountain. Well, you know, literally, you have a fountain and you have the head, and that's where it comes from. So it's like that. Yeah. So now, in his elaboration, Jiva Goswami, as is his practice, and we'll see this from time to time, he analyzes initially by describing a little more broadly the meaning of certain particular words. But then the main point really here in this verse is that he brings out the fact, or the point, that Shukadeva Goswami, when he has recited this verse, he says, Sa Ashraya, this Ashraya is Param Brahma, the Brahman, Paramatma, Supersoul, Iti, thus, or Iti can be understood as meaning, and so on. Like that, and so on. So it's not just Brahman and Paramatma, the and so on is there. So we all know, I think, that Brahman, Paramatma, then there's Bhagavan. Bhagavan is the and so on, actually. Yeah, so he mentions here that it's implied. Bhagavan is included. Bhagavan has not been excluded. And it's interesting, I was reading Srila Prabhupada's purport to this verse in the Bhagavatam just before I came over, and in fact I copied it, and I'll read some of it, and you'll see the emphasis is really very strong on this point, this iti, and so on, meaning Bhagavan. Synonym. This is now Prabhupada's purport to 2.10.7. Synonyms for the supreme source of all energy. Synonyms means, you know, equivalent, exactly equal, but different words. Not the same word, but it means exactly the same thing. Synonyms for the supreme source of all energies as explained in the very beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam, are Janmadyasya Yataha and Vedanti Tat Tattva Vedas Tattvam Yaj Jnanam Advayam Brahmeti Paramatmeti Bhagavaniti Shabjate, called Param Brahma, Paramatma, or Bhagavan. The word iti, used here in this verse, completes the synonyms, and thus indicates Bhagavan. So, Brahman, Paramatma, these are synonyms. Different words for the same thing. But this process of synonym, of stating the same thing with different words, is made complete when we state Bhagavan. The word iti used here in this verse completes the synonyms and thus indicates Bhagavan. This will be further explained in the later verses, but this Bhagavan ultimately means Lord Krishna, because the Srimad Bhagavatam has already accepted the Supreme Personality of Godhead as Krishna, Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. The original source of all energies, or the summum bonum, is the absolute truth, which is called Param Brahma, etc. And Bhagavan is the last word of the absolute truth. But even with the synonyms for Bhagavan, such as Narayan, Vishnu, and Purusha, the last word is Krishna, as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. Aham Saravasya Prabhavo Mata Saravam Pravartate, etc. Besides that, the Srimad Bhagavatam is the representation of Lord Krishna as a sound incarnation of the Lord. Krishne Swadamo Pagate Dharma Jnana Dabisaha Kalo Nashtadri Shamesha Puranarko Dunodita. Thus, by general conclusion, Lord Krishna is the ultimate source of all energies, and the word Krishna means that. And to explain Krishna, or the science of Krishna, the Srimad Bhagavatam has been prepared. In the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, this truth is indicated in the questions and answers by Suddha Goswami and great sages like Shonaka. And in the first and second chapters of the canto, this is explained. In the third chapter, the subject is more explicit. And in the fourth chapter, even more explicit. In the second canto, the absolute truth as the personality of Godhead is further emphasized, and the indication is the Supreme Lord Krishna. The summary of Srimad Bhagavatam in four verses, as we've already discussed, is succinct. This Supreme Personality of Godhead in the ultimate issue is confirmed by Brahma in his Brahma Samhita as Ishvara Parama Krishna, Satchidananda Vigraha. So it is concluded in the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. The complete subject matter is elaborately explained in the 10th and 11th cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam. In the matter of the changes of the Manus or Manvantaras, such as Swayambhuva Manvantara and Chakshusha Manvantara, as they are discussed in the 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th and 7th cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Krishna is indicated. In the 8th canto, the Vaivasvata Manvantara explains the same subject indirectly, meaning Krishna. And in the 9th canto, the same purport is there, meaning Krishna. In the 12th canto, the same is further explained, specifically regarding the different incarnations of the Lord. Thus it is concluded, by studying the complete Srimad Bhagavatam, that Lord Sri Krishna is the ultimate summum bonum, or the ultimate source of all energy, or what, ladies and gentlemen? Ashraya. Exactly. It's Krishna. It's not just a matter of Brahman, Paramatma, you know, and Bhagavan. We can throw Bhagavan iti by Bhagavan in there by saying iti. But actually it means Krishna. Krishna. And by the time we get through this purport, I think, you know, we got the message. And according to the grades of worshippers, the indications of the names may be differently explained as Narayan, Brahma, Paramatma, etc. In other words, just, what do they say? Beauty is in the eye of the beholder. It just depends on the perspective of the audience, of the person who's talking. But actually what we're really talking about is Krishna, isn't it? You get the idea? Yeah. Now, as we mentioned, I think right in the beginning, here in Tattvasandarbha, and even particularly in this part of Tattvasandarbha, the message of the Bhagavatam is being briefly stated, what it is about, what is the subject matter, the absolute truth, or how the Bhagavatam presents the absolute truth. So, in this, the concluding part of Tattvasandarbha, the absolute truth is being presented as Ashraya. Not so specifically Krishna. We have to wait. We have to go through Bhagavat Sandarbha and discuss about Brahman and in general the Bhagavan feature. Then Paramatma Sandarbha, discussing the Paramatma, before we come to the Krishna Sandarbha, where he just completely and totally focuses on Krishna at great length and with extreme clarity, in great detail. And then, it's totally explicit. There's no room for anyone to wonder, what is it actually, this ashraya? Is it Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan? Is it just any of them as you like? Or is it all of them? Or, that it's Krishna. We're talking here about Krishna. The ashraya is Krishna. Although, in terms of the sort of attitudes and perspectives of observers, that ashraya may be described as Brahman, Paramatma, Narayan, Vishnu, and so on. But that's just in terms of the observer. But really, the fact is that we're talking about Krishna here. We're talking about Krishna. Sa Ashraya, Param Brahma, Paramatma, Iti. Or Krishna, really. So, I think in that purport there, Srila Prabhupada's purport to that verse, it comes out fairly strongly, doesn't it? Prabhupada is basically saying, in the first canto, the message is Krishna. In the second canto, it's even more clearly Krishna. Then the third canto, it's even more clearly. Then in the various other cantos, it's even more clearly, and so on, like this. So Prabhupada is really going out of his way to make it very, very clear. So we should bear this in mind. Jiva Goswami is not, for the rest of our course here, in the rest of these verses we're going to be reading, Jiva Goswami is not really going to emphasize that it's Krishna, 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 as Prabhupada was doing here. It's just Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. But we should bear it in mind. He is going to talk about the ashraya and how the ashraya functions in being the ashraya, and how this makes him the ashraya, and how others who may possibly look like ashrayas, they may be possibly, in very small ways, but they're definitely not that ashraya, the ashraya. That is this Brahman Paramatma Iti. The absolute truth is the ashraya, in fact. But we should bear in mind that it's Krishna. So that really is the main point that I wanted to draw out here in text 58, that it's Krishna. This Sa Ashraya Param Brahma Paramatma Iti. That this is really pointing to Krishna. You know, I was reading through. Well, Prabhupada in the purport refers to that in the 12th canto, the same is further explained. So I had a look in the 12th canto and I came across an interesting thing, actually, that in the last chapter of the 12th canto, there is one verse which is, actually it's a series of verses in fact, which are all sort of put together in our BBT Srimad Bhagavatam. So there are these verses and they're listing out the 18 Puranas and how many verses there are in each Purana. So it mentions all of them, all 18 Puranas, including Srimad Bhagavatam. Then at the end, interesting point, having already mentioned all 18, and including Srimad Bhagavatam, and it says the Brahma Purana has 10,000 verses, Padma Purana 55,000, Vishnu Purana 23, Shiva Purana 24, Srimad Bhagavatam 18,000, and so on. And then it goes through all of them. Then at the end it says, thus, the total number of verses in all the Puranas is 400,000. But then it says, 18,000 of these, once again, belong to the Bhagavatam. So it's repeated. So you might think, well, you know, that's not a big deal. This is the Bhagavatam, so it's, you know, perhaps it's not so surprising that it just repeats again just to clarify itself. But in the purport, our BBT commentators make an interesting point. They say that Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his commentary on this series of verses, points out that in the first canto, third chapter of this work, after Suta Goswami lists the incarnations of Godhead, he adds the special phrase, Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam. But Krishna is the original personality of Godhead. Similarly, after mentioning all of the Puranas, Sri Suta Goswami again mentions the Srimad Bhagavatam to emphasize that it is the chief of all Puranic literatures. I don't know how familiar you are with the third chapter of the first canto, but there we're given this list of, you know, some 20 odd, how many is it, Mother Narayani? 23, is it? Is it 24? In the first canto? You sure? I think it's less than that. Okay, anyway, whatever it is. They're all there. They're all there. Including Lord Balaram and Krishna, then Buddha, then Kalki. Well, first perhaps I should mention that right at the beginning of the third chapter of the first canto, there is, either it's a question or it's just a statement to the effect that now we are going to talk about the avatars of Bhagavan. Or we're going to list out the avatars of Bhagavan, then you get them all 20 whatever, including Krishna and Balaram. Then you get this verse after that, after Kalki, who's the last one. After that, you get this verse 28, Ete Changsa Kala Pumsa, that there are so many avatars, basically, but Krishna's too Bhagavan Swayam. But Krishna is the Swayam Bhagavan, actually. In other words, Krishna, just like here, the Bhagavatam is mentioned again, even though it's been already mentioned. But there, even though Krishna has been mentioned in the context of the avatars, but then he's mentioned again as being Swayam Bhagavan, the original Bhagavan, original Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is important. And then I just copied out the last verse of the Bhagavatam. And it's a good one. It's a really nice one. Nama Sankirtanam Yasya Sarva Papa Pranashanam Pranamo Dukha Shamanas Tam Namami Harim Param. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Lord Hari, the congregational chanting of whose holy names destroys all sinful reactions, and the offering of obeisances unto whom relieves all material suffering. That's the very last verse. That's it. That's the end of Srimad Bhagavatam right there. And again, it's pointing to Hari, Krishna. But what else is it pointing to? Just an interesting little point to note. Nama Sankirtanam Yasya. The Sankirtan, the performance of Sankirtan, right in that last verse. Anyway, these things are all significant and interesting. So, we should, from this text 58, we should bear it in mind very clearly that really, the point is being made that this ashraya, this is actually Krishna himself. And even though, in the course of the continuing discussion, and for that matter, the Bhagavatam verses themselves, and then Jiva Goswami's elaboration, that, you know, the discussion is in more general terms about the ashraya and a lot of talk about the super soul actually. But we should have it clearly in our minds that really and ultimately we are talking here about Krishna. And we're not so much worried about the Brahman and Paramatma. It's like that. So, one other little point I can mention, which is there in Jiva Goswami's commentary. He says that when Shukadev says in this verse 7, Abhasas cha, Nirodhas cha, the Abhas, of course, as was mentioned here in Tattva Sandhava, it's referring to the creation, Sarga. From creation to destruction. So, in other words, so the cha, Abhasas cha, Nirodhas cha, the cha is referring to all the nine topics. It's not just that creation and destruction are dependent on the ashraya, and he is the source of them, and you know, the creation, and then he is who everything goes back into at the time of destruction. It's not only that, the cha, those two chas, and they're referring to all the nine topics. So like this, you know, the way these verses are spoken in Sanskrit, particularly in the Bhagavatam, you know, there is the element of code, you know, things being condensed, a certain volume of meaning being condensed into one little word. So here, like this, iti is indicating Bhagavan, but beyond Bhagavan is indicating Krishna, but it's all just in that little code form of iti. And then here, this cha, the use of cha, and is there to indicate all nine. So this is very common in the Bhagavatam, and we'll see in verse 60, I think at the end of verse 60, there is the final conclusion is, he says something like, well, what he actually says is, Sri Shuka. That is a sentence, Sri Shuka. But it translates that, the translation is, the verse under discussion, Srimad Bhagavatam 2.10.9, was spoken by Sri Shuka. This is how Gopi Puranadana Prabhu has translated this statement, Sri Shuka. And when you read through the Sandarbhas, you always find that. Sandarbhas basically means sequences of Bhagavatam verses with elaborations here and there. And at the end of every verse or sequence of verses, you'll find Sri Shuka, or Sri Sutta, or Sri Prahlad, or something like that. But actually it means that, you know, the verse under discussion, verse such and such and such, was spoken by whoever. Yeah. So like this use of code is there. And, you know, we have to be a little careful. Otherwise, you know, even if you're a Sanskrit expert, you could easily miss these things and think that really the Ashraya is either the Brahman or Paramatma, and particularly the way that Jiva or Sukadeva Goswami really discusses Ashraya in the next few verses, the balance of these verses, which here in the 10th chapter, which are discussing Ashraya. You know, you couldn't be faulted too much just in terms of literal Sanskrit translation if you came out thinking that the Ashraya was Brahman, or probably more particularly Paramatma. But that iti, and what the implications of that iti are, they're really very, very significant. And you may have heard once Prabhupada was asked, one devotee said to Prabhupada that, you know, you translate these verses, but then sometimes we find things in the translations, but when we look in the actual Sanskrit, we don't really find that. You know, it's like you put in something else, you know, sort of expanded on some statement which may actually be in the verse. You know, in other words, the devotee was sort of implying, you know, are you being a little, I don't know, you know, tricky, or I guess ultimately, are you doing something that perhaps you shouldn't be doing? But Prabhupada didn't say that, no, that, you know, that I'm being facetious here. I just happen to like Krishna so much that I'm just putting him in, you know. Even if he's not there, I'll put him in anyway. So Prabhupada didn't say like that. Actually, Prabhupada said, no, this is my expertise, that I can actually see what the meaning is. So then, therefore, sometimes I do expand on just the literal, you know, ABC, word-for-word translation. But this is actually giving a clearer and more proper understanding of what it's really about. Yeah. So here then we have a couple of examples of that. Abhasis cha, Nirodhas cha. Two of the nine are mentioned, that the Ashraya is, that these things are based on the Ashraya. But actually it means all nine are based on the Ashraya. And then Paramatma iti, the iti is indicating Bhagavan also, must be included. But not just Bhagavan, specifically Krishna. Anyway, I think you got the point by now, didn't you? You got the point? Okay. Then I suppose we could just have a little... Well, before we go on to 59, perhaps are there any questions or comments on 58? Yeah.
In the verse, is it because the function of creation, the function of
Yes, well, the discussion of Ashraya, as we will see it unfold, it is in terms, over the next few verses I mean, it is in terms of how the Ashraya is working in the material world. And when it comes to the material world, then it's more a matter of Brahman and Paramatma, or even more particularly, it's Paramatma, really. The Lord is dealing with the conditioned souls as Paramatma, more than as Bhagavan, with the devotees, of course, as Bhagavan. But with the conditioned souls, he is working as Ashraya, you know, on an ongoing, constant basis, 24 hours a day. He's working with them as Paramatma. So that is going to be, we'll see, how Jiva Goswami or Shukadev Goswami really analyzes the Ashraya at this point. You know, we should also bear in mind, and it was mentioned, I think yesterday we mentioned, that the main discussion of Ashraya is in the 10th canto. Actually, Ashraya is everywhere. This is, you know, like very explicit discussion of Ashraya. But, you know, the main discussion of Ashraya is in the 10th canto. Yeah. And, you know, Krishna Sandarbha is talking so much about Krishna in terms of the 10th canto, and, you know, in terms of his pastimes and so on like that. Yeah. Any other comment or question? All right, I guess we can just very briefly start looking at text 59. Here it starts to get, you could say, perhaps slightly more complicated. So, we have these nine verses. Second Canto, chapter 10, starting with verse 1 and 2, that listed out the 10 subjects. Then 3 to 6, which talked about the first nine, and then the final 3, 7, 8, and 9 are talking about Ashraya, and we just discussed verse 7, which was an introduction to the Ashraya. So now, here in 59, and actually it's 60 also, but 59, Jiva Goswami quotes the next two verses. And then for the balance of 59, he discusses the first, verse 8. And then in 60, he discusses verse 9. So these verses then, these Bhagavatam verses, I'll just read. Yod yat miko yam purusha, so sa veva didaivika. Yastatro baya vicheda purusho hyadi botika ekameka tarabhave yada nopa labamahe tritayam tatrayo veda sa atma swashrayashraya. Isn't that interesting? Swashrayashraya. What we're talking about here is Ashraya, but he's not only Ashraya, he's Ashraya Ashraya. What do you think that means? Yes, he is the shelter of other entities who could, at least partially or in certain respects like that, also be considered Ashrayas. But he is their Ashraya. And then sa ashraya ashraya. So what does the sa indicate, do you think? The person. Yeah, but not specifically the sense of it. What is the sense of it? Sa means he or his. What it means is he is the shelter of those things, of everyone, including those who could also be considered to be shelters to some degree, plus he is his own shelter. He has no shelter beyond himself. He is his own shelter. Therefore, he is the ashraya. He is the shelter. The ultimate shelter. And this is who we're talking about. This is what Srimad Bhagavatam is about. This person. So I'll just read 59.1. Sukadeva Goswami next discusses the divisions of Adhyatmika, Adhidaivika, and Adhibhautika. He does this to clarify the nature of the ashraya, which he describes by referring to the direct, common experience of the individual microcosm. That means you and me. The individual microcosm. That's us. How we are constituted in this material world. So how are we constituted then? Well, Sukadeva Goswami says, this is the translation of those two verses, this Adhyatmika Purusha is the same as the Adhidaivika Purusha. And he who creates the differentiation between these two is called the Adhibhautika Purusha. In the absence of any one of these, we do not perceive the other two. He who knows these three is the Lord, who, being independent of everything else, is swashrayashraya, the support of his own self, and is the true ashraya. Well, let us just conclude at this point by telling you that the Adhyatmika Purusha means the jiva. Conditioned soul. The conditioned soul. When we say jiva, we mean the conditioned soul. And then the Adhidaivika Purusha means, synonymously, the demigods and the sensory functions they control and, distribute to the conditioned souls. And how is it that you see? Is because of a demigod, that's how. It's not just because you have glasses that you see, or just it's not even just because you've got eyes that you see. There are quite a number of people who have eyes but don't see. Blind people. So, Adhidaivika person means, in the same breath, you could say, the demigods and the sensory functions that they're controlling and distributing and administering amongst the conditioned souls in this world. And then the Adhibhautika Purusha means the body, the material body. Now this rather sort of enigmatic statement that the Adhyatmik Purusha is the same as the Adhidaivik Purusha. And he who creates some difference between the two is called the Adhibhautik Purusha. This we will discuss tomorrow. So you can be in a little suspense. What on earth does this mean? But it's very interesting the way he describes it. My gosh, Jiva Goswami is very clever. Yes, any comments or questions here? Yes. The Adidaivik, Daiva. Daiva means the demigods, the devas. And the Adiatmik means the jiva, the soul, but the conditioned soul. You got that? This sounds like it'll make a good question in our test, isn't it? What are the Adiatmika, Adidaivika, and Adibhautika Purushas? So you got it. Has anybody not got it? Or fearful that they may have not got it? Adi. Now, why do you have to ask me a technical Sanskrit question that I can't answer? Well, if I remember, I'll try and look it up. Is that okay? I'm sorry, I'm not a Sanskritist. Do we have any Sanskritists here? You know, I don't want to just throw out a bit of a speculation at you. But definitely the Adhyatmika Purusha is the conditioned soul. The Adidaivika Purusha, of course, means person. So they've been spoken of here as if they're three persons. The Adiatmika person is the conditioned soul. The Adidaivika person is the demigods and simultaneously, not just those demigods, like there are other people up there, but specifically in terms of how they control and dispense, make available sensory capabilities. Your ability to see, your ability to hear, this is all given by demigods. Yes. And you can't separate the two. He's not separating the two. Looking at the two as one, they're inseparable. Yeah, it's the material body. Yeah, considered. Because the conditioned soul means the spirit soul. The conditioned soul. And the adibhautik means the body, and the conditioned soul goes into the body. Right? And when the body dies, the conditioned soul goes on, and after some time goes into another body. So they're two distinct entities, obviously, the soul and the body. But specifically the conditioned soul. We're not talking about liberated souls here. In fact, generally when the term jiva is used, it is referring to the conditioned soul. Not really the liberated person, but that 1/10,000th the size of the tip of a hair, the conditioned soul. Is that clear enough? Yes, they're two entities. It's more just for the sake of the discussion. In fact, he addresses the point. He says that the body is not really a person. But in this discussion, we're attributing personness to the body. As if it were a person. We're dealing with it as if it were a person. Yeah, so it's in that sense. Otherwise, you know, it's second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the soul and the body. But here, for the sake of the discussion, we are attributing a type of personness to the body and calling it a purusha. But yeah, just hang in there. And, you know, I think by the time we've finished tomorrow, I think it'll be relatively a lot clearer, including this thing about how the adhyatmic and the adhidaivic are the same. But then when the bodies, the adhibhautics, enter in, then the adhyatmics and the adhidaivics show that the fact that they are actually separate from each other, it'll all become clear, I'm sure. Sure enough. Yes.
Mind control.
Chandra.
Mind control is according to some yogis and devotees controlling their mind. It's also the effect of Deva.
Did you get that? The question is that the mind, well, the question was, first part, is the mind also under the control of the demigods? The answer is yes, just like the other senses. So then when we have yogis and people like that who are trying to control their mind, are the demigods involved also? Well, the answer is yes. The answer is yes. And, you know, it's discussed, I think, in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, how there is a type of cooperation between the devotees and the demigods. And Prabhupada is talking there more in terms of, I think, or Krishna is talking, Prabhupada also, in terms of supply of foodstuffs and things like that. But it's also in terms of everything. So with the devotees, the demigods help them. These things are all under the demigods. The demigods are devotees. So when they see here's a devotee trying to control his mind, then Chandra, the moon deity, who's in charge of the mind, then he also helps. You know, normally we don't really, in everyday terms, when we're talking about our mind and controlling our mind and engaging it in Krishna's service and all this sort of thing, we don't normally invoke the demigods or, you know, involve them directly in the discussion. But we can understand that they are involved behind the scenes because we're dealing with our material mind and getting a grip on it like that. So in that sense, the demigods are involved. Is that okay? Okay. Okay. Any other comment or question? Madhuji? Adhyatmic, adhidaivic, and adhibhautic. Correct. Correct. Other living entities, you know, the rickshaw wallah who tries to cheat you, or the mosquito who bites you, that's adhibhautic. But here, this is now a different application of the same terms. Okay. In other words, these terms, adhiatmic, adhidaivic, and adhibhautic, are not just absolute in the terms that you're talking about, that they only refer to those miseries. There are other ways to apply the terms, and here they are. Because this is straight out of Srimad Bhagavatam. And this translation, if I remember correctly, is straight out of Prabhupada's Srimad Bhagavatam. So it's just another application of those terms in a somewhat different sense. I mean, some of them, adhyatmic and adhibhautic, are in somewhat different senses. Now it's your body. And adhyatmic really specifically means the soul, atma. Yeah. But atma can also mean the body, soul, and mind. It can also just mean the body. Can also just mean the mind. It depends on the context. So in this context, when we talk about adiatmik, we are talking now about the conditioned soul. And botic refers to embodied beings or bodies, you know, living entities with bodies. But now we're talking about this body, your one, specifically, not someone else's one. So it's just a different application of the same terms. So it's okay. I didn't say, Shukadev Goswami said, but what I did say is that tomorrow we're going to explain, or rather, Shukadev Goswami and Jiva Goswami are definitely going to explain what that means. So just remain in suspense, or just read on, you know, I mean, text 59 is pretty short. It's just two parts, isn't it? And you could even read text 60, which is longer, which completes the discussion of these two verses. So if you like, you can read through, and I think you'll get some idea. But anyway, we'll also go through it more elaborately tomorrow. Yeah. Some. Some are different, some are the same. Yeah. You know, I think where they're different, it's all these translations are by Gopi Pranadana because, you know, the BBT was, and it may still publish Tattva Sandarbha with Gopi Pranadana Prabhu's commentaries. It's all finished, it's all done. But I don't know exactly why, but they just haven't done it. So, you know, the thing is that in, like I mentioned, in his elaborations, Jiva Goswami often focuses on certain words and says, this word means this and this word means that. So, you know, in his explanation, he's drawing out the meaning in a certain way. And that may, you know, in terms of just subtle aspects of detail, which don't really make substantial difference, but more perhaps in terms of emphasis, something like that. His presentation, there may be some slight difference between his presentation and Prabhupada's. So then Gopi Pranadana, when he has then translated those verses, he has translated them in terms of the explanation of Jiva Goswami, where Jiva Goswami has said, well, this word means that. You know, so he has translated it. Although Prabhupada might have translated in a slightly different sense. But then if you go through the purport by Prabhupada, you know, you usually find it all ties in very nicely. All right. So we'll see you tomorrow at 5:30. Srila Prabhupada ki.